This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody, Jason here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Beth Renninger from University of South Carolina. Beth, are you ready to talk about persuasion?
I am. I'm set.
All right. We had a super great episode talking about authenticity in part one. For people tuning in, if you jump straight to this one, make sure to go back and check out part one. There was a lot of stuff that Beth spoke about regarding her sales, her background, her history in sales, her thoughts about sales, being an operations person first, which, funny enough, is exactly how I started in sales, by being an operations person who then the salesperson was fired, and then I became in charge of both. So I know that path on my side as well. But even to what you're teaching students about authenticity and being honorable as a requirement of just holding yourself to it. For people tuning in, also, Beth, the parts will be in the show notes, but Beth's background is from sales and sales leadership, going from operations to marketing to leadership to even being a, as she said, a sophisticated buyer at one point. So she's seen it all from not sales to sales to buying to now educating and teaching people in the program there at the Darla Moore School of Business at University of South Carolina. All right, so Beth, let's talk about persuasion, which to me is the intentional act of moving the right people forward towards a good conclusion, right? And leaving them in a better place. And, you know, some people would call this the sales process. What did you think the process was when you first started in sales, or what did they teach you about a sales process when you went to work for a marketing company that turned out to be a sales company?
Let's see. I thought that my job was to just, if I told people about the product, they would say yes. And I had to be an expert on the things that I was selling back then, which were some complex data services. And that was not, I was not an engineer. So that was not, it wasn't my background. And so I really, I misunderstood what I was going to be doing and thought that it was about being a product expert. What I learned is that it's less about being a product expert and more about being a little bit of a matchmaker or a counselor, to where a problem solver, one of my favorite words, to really help people, to serve them, and to figure out in a respectful kind of way if I could help them and I could even serve them or not, and solve a problem that mattered to them. I think that's probably the most brief way that I can say it.
Do you agree with this statement or disagree with this statement? When done properly, and I'll say that to put judgment on it, when done properly, your sales interaction will feel like you just got done with a therapy session.
Yes, I think.
Agree or disagree?
I would say it depends. Yeah. Because to me, it depends on the product you're selling, who your customer is. And I'm too much of a marketer to really buy into broad generalizations. I'm a believer in segmentation and relevance. And so I think it depends. Because you can spend a lot of time counseling prospects and no time closing deals. And that does nothing to grow revenue. And so it is really knowing what your goal, like when to hold, when to fold, when to move on, when to dig in. And I think those are some of the things that come with experience and come with some of the training and come with really understanding, as you've said, like what persuasion looks like, what it feels like, is it possible? Is it happening?
Makes sense. And it depends is definitely relevant. That's always my answer. That's my answer for pretty much everything. and really what I found is when you're building connection with someone, you're asking questions, you're going deep, no matter what you're selling, you want to find out what it is that they need and why they need it. Usually people, when you, in my opinion, when you do it right, people will trust you. Then they'll start sharing things with you. And it will sometimes feel like you're a therapist because they will tell you things. You're like, I can't believe you're telling me these things. It's because they trust you. And depending on what you're selling, sometimes that can be emotionally draining, you know, after you've had some meetings where you're just like, oh my gosh, like, I feel like they just shared a whole bunch of stuff with me. It just made me think about it with that counselor and problem solver side.
Yeah.
And so was the company you worked for, did they have that process? Did they give you a process, or did you just assume it was product specialist and then you realized on your own it was those other things?
I assumed I was going to have to be a product expert when I went through training and really started to interact with the professionals that I worked with. I saw how wrong I was. And I saw the importance of developing a relationship, and I saw the problem solving, not product expertise, but problem solving opportunity and requirement. In that job, was the first time I got very comfortable to leaning in to admitting when I didn't know something, because I always had felt like I needed to have an answer. And when I realized, actually, I didn't have to have every answer on the fly, but what I needed to do is just take a follow-up. I don't know the answer to that, but I will find out and I will get back to you. And what I also saw was that built credibility. And to the word that you just used, trust. Because when people realized that I wasn't going to BS them and say that I didn't know something if I didn't know it, but that I would follow up, I would find out, and I would get back to them, that showed them that I could be dependable and that I was honest. And so over time, there's a sales process that I teach now, but thinking about when I went into it, thought it would be about product. It wasn't. Realized it's about a problem, and then how to facilitate a conversation around that.
Okay. So then going to the second part, which you just brought up, what is it that you're teaching, or how are you finding the best way to teach a sales process that, you know, is more generally applicable no matter what somebody ends up going into selling?
Yeah. So we have 17 corporate partners that we work with across many industries. Some are tech, some are heavy industry, some are financial services, some are B2C, most are B2B, but I have a few that are B2C. And given that, when we started the program, I brought with me the sales process that we used where I came from. And I was like, okay, well, this is pretty good. And then a lot of people said, oh, you should teach this. You should teach this. You should teach this. Pick a book, pick a name for some very well-known methodologies that are out there. And I said, I think strategically what we need to do is teach something more generalized. And what I don't want students to do is develop bad habits that then an employer is trying to correct for later. And so we teach a five-step process. It's not. It's not spin. It's not challenger. It's none of the well-known, really successful sales methodologies that are out there. But I'm starting with baseline people that know nothing about sales and actually also have some resistance. So I teach them how to work themselves and a prospect or a customer through the process, through a conversation. And we call them from the beginning sales conversations. So it starts, and I, after a couple of years, saw that the students, I was communicating one way, they were not hearing me. And so I built an acronym and came up with a way for them to remember it. And we call it the CASHU process. And I was like, if you remember CASH for you, then that might be a good start. So the step one is connect. And that's how you build rapport. And second, the step two, ask. How are you going to identify needs? You're going to ask your questions. The S is solve a problem. Position your solution. There's my marketer showing again. It's not about pitching a solution. You have to show your prospect why your solution matters, how it will help them. H is handling objections, handling concerns when they say no, because they will. What are you going to do about it? And then I refer to the close as unite. I want to see the students get on the same table, same side of the table with their buyer. I want to, you know, I say close with benefits and next steps. Remind your prospect, how is their life going to be better as you move forward together? And so that cashew process we teach in our sales classes, and five-step process, we had 5 steps where I came from. Lots of people, sometimes it's 4, sometimes it's 6. It just kind of depends. But I started using it, and then I have tested it with the many companies that we work with and said, is this working for you? Because ultimately, I don't want to do a disservice to the students or our corporate partners where there's something they are trying to undo when a student arrives. And so far what happens is it gets the students comfortable. They go there, and wherever they go, they may layer on the challenger approach. They may layer on spin. They may layer on a proprietary sales process. But it seems to be working as, okay, this is how to get started understanding the navigating and leading of a sales conversation.
I absolutely love that. This is the first time I'm hearing about this. Like, we haven't spoken about this before, just so people like tuning in know. I think this is amazing. It's so similar and in the same belief that I have for my authentic persuasion pathway, which I won't go into here, but it's also 5 steps and it's also fundamental, right? Where you would then layer on those other things. And I truly appreciate the fact that you're not focused on, you know, what a lot of others do, which is, okay, we're teaching spin because that's what people teach, or challenger, or, you know, the Sandler Pain Submarine or something like that, where it's just like, all right, here's something, but then that doesn't necessarily apply to all situations, versus what you're talking about, right? Connect, ask, solve problem, handle objections, concerns, and then unite. I mean, that's just a fundamental thing. You do that, and then whatever product or whatever specifics, you can layer on top of it, but that's universal. And I will say, I absolutely love that the fifth one is unite, that it's about being on the same side, because that hopefully undoes this feeling that sales is me versus you, and I have to convince you, I have to close you so that I can win and get the deal done, right? Instead, it's we're in this together. And I love like the we language of salespeople using we language, like we're going to do this, and it's you and I and on this together versus against each other.
Yes. The we language and the idea of a close to me feels like a cliff. And that's very uncomfortable. If you're a buyer, it's coming and you're just waiting mm-hmm. for them to ask a question. And it's just, it doesn't feel good. And for these beginning sellers, it doesn't feel good to them either. They're terrified. When I say you're solving problems, you're figuring out how you're going to move forward together, it helps to sort of take some of the pressure out of that. And then when we talk about objections, I'm like, look, nobody ever says yes. And if they say yes, I'm telling you they're going to change their mind on you, because probably they're saying yes too easily just to get you off the phone, and then you'll never hear from them again. So at least if they throw some objections at you, you know you got something. And you can continue the conversation. So this is a process that works well for us. And it follows along with some of the, I'm going to call them rubrics. I do work in education and everything is rubric based, but I have some philosophies about that. And I always say to the students, there is no rubric in the real world. so they've lived their lives and lived their education against a rubric. And so what we try to do is talk about the flow and talk about know where you are, know what's next, know where you're going, but also have patience and spend time with your prospect at each one of those steps. And it lines up with the rubrics that are used for competitions. But it's not an exact match. And I'm okay with that, because I really want, again, I'm not, We're training students and we're teaching students not to perform against a rubric. We are teaching them to be successful in the real world, to realize what their strengths are. I know you talk about that in your book as well, to realize what their strengths are, to learn how to understand other people's problems, and then figure out how they can help and how they can serve a prospect. And if they can't, they need to move on. And if they can, they need to be prepared, do their research, and communicate that effectively.
So one part of that process you said is that no matter what, they're going to ask, they're going to raise an objection. They're going to have an issue. If they say yes, then it's too easy and it means they're probably blowing you off, which I could argue that it could also mean that you did a really good job of covering everything mm-hmm. in advance. So there wasn't an objection, but you also said objections or concerns in what you teach the students. What's the difference between an objection and concern, and how do they handle those differently?
Objection is not a word that students understand. It doesn't have any meaning to them. It's a sales lingo word. It's not something that before you're in sales, that's really, again, it's not relevant to them. A concern, a reason to say no, that they understand what would keep you from saying yes. They understand that because there's lots of things that they say no to. And so I always say, you know, that's your time to lean in and tell me more about that. Those are my three favorite words, and anybody that's been a student of mine knows. I call it the Swiss Army knife of sales and also conversation. For an introvert, it is my go-to phrase in any instance where I'm like, I don't know what to say. Okay, tell me more about that. That's very interesting. So we start to talk about, well, how do you probe? How do you understand that? There's classic methods of feel, felt, found, and I understand how you feel. Others have felt the same way, what they found was, blah, 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 and being prepared for that. But what I also say to the students is, you know, you need to ask, tell me more. You need to ask why. You can dig behind that, because a lot of people will say it's price, it's not price. Tell me more. Why is price a concern? What sits behind that? What sits behind that? What sits behind that? And so the more that they can lean in on that to find out what's really the objection, then that is what will enable them to discern and decide, is this a real opportunity or is this something there's not a there right now. Like the person that was reaching out to me where I had to say, your product doesn't fit my needs. So as much as I enjoyed getting your emails and I think it looks interesting, it's not relevant to me.
Yeah, makes sense. And I love that you brought that up, to tell me more about, you know, being curious. The things that you said in the first part that made you successful at sales that you were excited about was being curious and being interested in people and taking that kind of response. I think that's a great lesson for anyone in sales where the standard, I'm going to say, mindset and then also teaching is when someone raises an objection or raises some kind of wall, you're supposed to respond and rebut it as much as possible and overcome that and treat it as something you need to, you know, crush and move forward through, right? When someone says they can't afford it or the price is too high, like you have to have the standard response and just go into attack mode versus tell me more about it. I use something called empathetic reversing in what, you know, I teach, which is to just add, like you said, find out why, what's below it, because it's never price. Sometimes it actually is price, but usually it's not price. It's usually value. But then if they can't afford it, like why, like where is that coming from? And I love that you're talking about just going deeper and using that curiosity. And I love what you said. And maybe it's because despite what people think of me, I'm more of an introvert. I'm an analytical person. And so that's just my mode as well. Tell me more about it. I don't want to overcome this by being the center of attention and out talking you. I want you to tell me what's really going on. And then let's walk through it.
And getting the students comfortable with sitting in silence, because when you say, tell me more to a prospect, they are going to be surprised. And sitting in silence is a very hard thing for most people to do. In our world, which moves so quickly, none of us very few of us have a lot of silence in our lives anymore. If we are walking, you see people, they've got earbuds in. If they are in the car, they're listening to something. On their computer, they're doing something. We don't sit in silence. And you send someone a text, you expect a response right away. Post on social media, you get a fire hose back. So you really just sitting and waiting and having the patience to do that and being comfortable with that takes some practice. So I say to the students, someone will talk. It doesn't have to be you. And it will also disrupt, you know, there's habits that buyers get and they're so used to. I used to see how few words I could say on the phone with someone. And it would be like the over under of maybe 5. And I'd go through a whole phone call and I would say 5 words or less. And that person probably felt like, nailed it. I got this. She said she'd schedule a meeting. But guess what? They'd never get on my calendar. The more that someone else talks, and this is what I say to the students, the more that the prospect talks, the better you're doing.
I couldn't agree more. And so on a side note regarding silence, in your experience, opinion, and sales, and then obviously what you teach, where is the silence a good strategy? When is it, you know, when asking a question, like where are you teaching the students how to put that appropriate silence in?
Questions, because they, when they start asking questions, again, buyers are not, they are used to being told. So much of selling, it's not really, but people think it's telling, right? Like, and they're not the same thing. Selling is not telling. And so when a question comes at them, it's surprising. And if a question from the buyer gets ignored, how did you get my phone number? Why are you calling me here? That's, you know, that's not necessarily a good start. So we talk about some of the things that might be said, and there's lots of things, lots of recordings out there about how to handle those kinds of, interactions and things like that. But what I try to say to the students is slow things down, stay in the moment, listen, and don't be afraid of a pause. It doesn't mean that you're going to be in slow motion. It just means that you're creating some space in the busy day. Now, too much space and they're hanging up on you. So it's a tricky balance. And it's one of those things that you're not going to know when you start, but you will learn over time. And if you have sitting in silence for even just a few seconds, if you're able to do that, I think that can be something that's useful. Whether you want to use it with your questions, whether you want to use it as you position the solution, how does that sound to you as like a trial close? If you, that's a great question. I'd love to hear you tell me more. Well, I don't really know more I want to say about my objection. It's just too expensive. You can't just sit there indefinitely, but it's worth a try to use it and to not run from it and just fill it with blah, blah, blahs.
Yeah. And what's interesting, and I appreciate what you just said, which is also, where is that limit on asking questions and waiting in silence and basically answering questions with a question or answering objections with a question and just trying to get what you want? And when somebody doesn't want to share, and you know, you got to figure out why that is, right? It's right. It's my general issue with the reversing strategy, which is answer every question with a question. And it's like, yeah, at some point,
irritating.
You need the buyer more than they need you, I promise. And so at what point do you want to annoy and offend people with your strategies versus actually trying to help?
It is not, I think a lot of people, I started out this way and I try to say to the students, this is not a fencing match. Right. It's not, we talked about a little bit about this when it comes to the close and uniting at the end. This is not sparring, you know, like swords or fencing. I get a jab in here and there. It is much more coordinated where we are trying to do a dance together. And thinking about it that way, we're not adversaries, we're partners potentially. Is one of the things that I talk with students about and that they experience when we do on-campus competitions. And they go into it thinking it's going to be adversarial when they are go in to do the competition with the corporate judge. And they walk out saying, oh, they were, you know, they were really helpful. And I could see how the conversation would actually go in the sales conversation. I thought they were, you know, just going to give me a hard time. And it wasn't like that. It wasn't easy. But I had enough, I'd done enough preparation. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the things that I would also emphasize there.
Well, and I think that's a throwback to what people think sales is about, like we talked about in part one, which is when you have that bad experience as a customer, whether you buy or you don't buy, but you just are left with this negative impression of a salesperson doing a sales job, then it feels adversarial, right? Like when you go in and you're not sure what you want to buy, and then they're pressuring you to buy something, and then literally trying to keep you from leaving the store so they can talk you into buying this thing that you don't want for whatever the reason is, then it feels like it's me versus you and whoever's tougher is going to win. And I think, unfortunately, that then becomes what people think in sales, which is why, again, your five-step process, number five, unite, is so important to me, which is, no, this isn't about me versus you, right? That's old school. That's the gross side. Like, this is about me and you, right? Sales should be something you're doing for somebody and with somebody, not to somebody, which is what I say all the time.
Right. I love that. Not to somebody. Yes. Agree. Yeah.
So last part on this, on the sales process, on persuasion and what you're seeing. And obviously you have your five-step process and that's built around both sides of this and what buyers want. But what are buyers wanting from salespeople with a process? I mean, obviously uniting, but is there anything else that comes to mind?
I think in addition to relevance, there's this idea of respect. Mm. And if I know what I want, please respect that and don't take me back to what you want to ask me. I'm currently looking for a new car and I know exactly what I want. And it's always been an interesting experience. I've always loved buying new cars because generally my experience in a dealer would be like, people would look at me and be like, oh, well, what color do you want? And really I would be saying, I don't care what color it is. I'm looking for this size engine, these wheels, these things, you know, I want these things. I want this model in this form. And most of all, this is the price that I'm willing to pay. So it was everything but what they would think that the, you know, the little lady would be wanting. And so I think with buyers, respect them. And this is so important now because there are so many more resources. It used to be that the sales professional was the trusted resource for information from a company. And I might have learned something from a sales professional that I wouldn't have known otherwise. That is not the case anymore. Buyers are more well-informed. They do their research. They know what they need and what they're looking for most times. And then when they're ready, they're going to be open to exploring and considering maybe a few options and looking at some different things. But if you are selling some kind of software platform, don't take them back to the beginning of the process if they've already looked at it and said, I know I need this, this, and this. Tell me how you stack up against that. And to me, that's where the listening becomes so important because our sales professionals, if you are asking good questions, you're discerning where someone is in the sales process and how much they already know. And if you can fast forward to the point and meet them where they are, I think your chances of success are going to be much better. I'll contrast that with I've made some purchases where I am not an expert. I know I'm not an expert and I need someone to guide me. And I say, I need you to help me with this because this is not my thing. So start with the basics, ask me some questions, and then make some recommendations and tell me why those are the recommendations. So I'm I think all sales professionals are make for interesting buyers because we like to play around with sales professionals. I'm always respectful, but I do think that we can be clear on what where we are in the sales process. Are we ready to buy? Or are we exploring? Are we discovering? Are we learning? Or we're at the point where we're ready to write a check, write a purchase order, make a recommendation, issue an RFP, kind of depends.
And going back to the word you used in the beginning of this, which is respect, the more that salespeople can respect where the potential buyer is in their journey or what they want for them to be okay with the process, I think is so important. So many salespeople don't do that. It's like, all right, you know, like the emails that you get that you referred to earlier. It's like, hey, can I get 10 to 15 minutes on your calendar? It's like, no, tell me more about your thing. Like they'd be like, I get these emails back. They say, no, let's talk first. It's like, absolutely not. Like I'm not playing right. your game. Like if you don't respect right. me and what I'm doing, then I as a buyer, I don't need you as much as you need me. And I know that. And so like, no, absolutely not. And I think salespeople get stuck in that cycle of like, I have this process, I have this game I'm playing and everyone needs to play the same game. And here's what we're doing. And I don't really care where you are, Mrs. or Mr. Buyer. And I think that's so valid. I love that piece about respect and respecting the buyer. And then obviously there's that balance, right? We both know that where, you know, respect that the buyer wants it a certain way, but in order to move forward, you also have to like move through or past whatever that is. Maybe the right. buyer says, no, I only want to do this all via email. It's like, yeah, I respect that for now, but at some point we'll definitely need to have a phone call. Right.
That's right. Yeah.
And so where is that balance? You don't just become a pure order taker, which I think, you know, is where some salespeople end up just at the whim of buyers. So this is a great place to end part two. Perfect. I couldn't have planned this better, but perfect place to stop. Next part, we'll talk about the future of sales. Beth, for people that are tuning in, again, the best ways to do it if they want to connect with you on LinkedIn, Beth Renninger on LinkedIn. The link will be in the show notes. Also, University of South Carolina's Center for Sales Success. The link will be in the show notes. Best way to do it is to Google. It's also sc.edu and a whole bunch of other stuff. They can probably find it if they go through that. Beth, thank you for being here again and being a part of this conversation about sales processes and what you're doing to build a foundation of a sales process that is then universal enough where people can go out there in a sales role and learn other products and systems on top of it, but you're teaching them the fundamentals. So I appreciate that and your time here today.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And again, as always, for everyone tuning in, thank you for being here. There's some reason that you're here. This is the one thing I found about life is that if there's a podcast, a video or something where it's like you end up watching or listening to it, there's some reason. So hopefully if you're here, you found that nugget, whatever it is. Maybe it's all of what Beth was talking about as we shift the world of sales from something that's gross and feels weird to something that's actual of service and value. And like Beth was talking about, uniting with the buyer so that it's a team event and it's not something I'm doing against you or to you, but we're doing this together and I'm helping leave you in a better place, which I think is the main purpose of sales. It should be anyway. And as always, please make sure to check out part three. We're going to talk about the future of sales. And thank you for being here. And thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.